Welcome back, everybody, to the Build Your First BI Solution with SQL Server 2008 R2. In this presentation, Peter Meyer is going to drill down on SQL Server 2008 R2 integration services, and he's going to talk about the real workhorse of integration services, which is data flow tasks.
Right. So in the previous presentation, we talked about control flow, and I did indeed introduce that there is a data flow task. And it's this task that implements the data flow engine. And so let's focus and drill into what the data flow task can do for us. So essentially, it's there to implement data flow movements. The greatest scenario for this is ETL, which is what integration services are primarily about. So the data flow task encapsulates the possibility, or really the potential, to extract data from a variety of sources, to transform it in sophisticated ways, to get that data in the right state, condition, level of cleanliness to then load into our destinations. So we see an example of it here. Essentially, we have a source that kicks it off. Where is that data coming from? The source is responsible for extracting the data into the data flow engine. Essentially, this is in memory. And this is where we get high performance and high scalability with integration services, is that once the data has been extracted from the source and it's within the memory pipeline, then extraordinary performance and scalability gains can be achieved. What we see here is, unfortunately, it looks like control flow. I'm not sure what the developers were thinking when they produced this, because we have rectangles that are connected by colored arrows. But there is a major difference here in that the rectangles here represent the components of either sources, transformations, or destinations. And the arrows that connect them are not precedence constraints. They're service paths that really allow the data to flow from one component to the other.
Right.
We have the two colors of green and red, not necessarily representing success or failure, but along the same lines, it could be that we have standard flows versus error flows of data. So the example that I have here, very simplistic, says we can extract our employees from the source system. We're attempting to perform a lookup to look up the surrogate key from our employee dimension table. There's the potential for a failure because we may not have an employee registered for a lookup, in which case the red path will then pass down the failed lookups, and we could use a derived column potentially to substitute a missing key.
And it's important not to be lazy when you're building these things and consider those error scenarios so
exactly.
That your package doesn't just stop and say, oop, there was an error condition here, I can't continue executing.
Or right? It falls over, and I think your developers right. Here in the audience will appreciate things like try-catch. In a sense, this is the ability for you to then respond to scenarios that are unexpected.
Right.
But the great thing about this is that we can auto-correct the data in the data flow itself. So here we see a union all that then brings back together the fixed data with the regular data. So that's our third transformation in the stream, and then we've successfully transformed the data, and we're ready to load into a destination to the employee table. Very simplistic example. I've seen some extraordinarily sophisticated data flows that consist of literally dozens and dozens of transformations in order to bring that data effectively into the required state. So how do we implement this? Well, it's assembled from the components of sources, transformations, and destinations that perform your ETL, your extract, transform, and load. And they're connected by service paths. The great thing for those that are saying, well, how do I debug this beast? Well, we have these data viewers that you can, at design time, connect to the paths. You can actually watch the data flowing through them. So let's explore the sources.
It's important to notice, too, from a debugging perspective, that there's transactional boundaries around all of this stuff. So it is possible to test things out and then kind of roll them back, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about serious ETL processes with large volumes of data,
yeah.
I mean, you're unlikely to suspend the execution of that just to check something out.
Right.
But during the development phase and the testing phase, it's often useful, particularly when you're troubleshooting why something isn't happening,
right.
To add that data viewer and then inspect the data.
Right.
They are ignored once you execute them on the server, but when executed within the development environment, they will be honored. So we have these six sources that we can use to kick off the data flow, the most common being the OLEDB source that allows us to connect to most popular relational systems. Also the ability to connect with ADO.NET, Excel, flat file sources like a CSV document, maybe an XML document, which is interesting when you think that XML is hierarchical. The output of this one can produce multiple outputs representing the different levels of a hierarchy.
Right.
We also have a raw file source. Let me come back to that in just a minute. And then we'll talk about the destination. So where can we land this data? We have the corresponding destinations for those sources. In addition, we have a record set destination that allows us to store the records in a variable object. And back in control flow, you might do something like use a for each container to enumerate across those records. We have data readers, so we could then pass the records out to a data reader. In fact, developers could execute packages programmatically and retrieve the data reader object. And so for sophisticated transformation, don't overlook the power and the ease of development of using integration services to transform your data and then programmatically execute and consume the output of the data flow. Raw file destination says we're really just dumping the data to disk as quickly as possible, basically serializing the in-memory data flow itself. So the source that corresponds to that could be used for intermediate processing, that we process to a certain point, and it's another data flow task that will come in later and pick that up with a raw file source.
So absolutely the most efficient way to pass data around internally inside an integration services.
Your standard approach in data warehousing is to stage data.
Right.
Now, if you appreciate that you don't need to query or manipulate that, that it's simply being stored for later retrieval, then this is the most efficient way to do
it. If you got to put it on disk.
Yeah. Just slap it down, basically serialize memory to disk, and then pick it up again. It will
got
be
it.
The fastest way to move forward. Now, for Enterprise Edition only, we have these special ones to support analysis services that we can pump the data from the data flow directly into our dimensions, partitions, and mining models. Okay, what's interesting is really what happens between the source and the transformations. Mm. All right, so we've categorized these transformations into groups like the row transformations, and essentially these transformations perform their operation row by row. So a character map works with string conversions, maybe uppercase, lowercase, working with different character sets, particularly with Asian languages. Copy column allows you to say, this column that's coming in, copy it to this destination outwards. Data conversion is your casting operator. Derive column allows you to do two things. You can replace the value of an existing column, providing it's the same data type. Then it uses integration services expression language to replace that, or introduce a new column based on an expression.
And it's important to note that that's typically the approach for quote-unquote reformatting data. You don't necessarily modify it in its source form because that's data's kind of read-only as it's flowing through the data flow pipeline, right? The
right.
way to do it is to create a new column that has the new reformatted value, and that may be what you wind up, you know, loading into your destination using that derived column transform.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. The fifth one here, OLEDB command, this is a bit of a chameleon in the sense that this can actually behave as a destination as well, that for each row passing into it, we could execute a command like a store procedure. We could map the columns being passed into this transformation to the input parameters of the store procedure. And so it provides a great deal of flexibility. If you have advanced logic that perhaps the data flow won't work with, you could write a store procedure to perform this and then execute that store procedure. But be warned, I wouldn't want to pass millions and millions of rows through this. It's terribly, terribly inefficient, which is against the philosophy of how data flow works.
But it is the way to break out of the black box of a standard, you know, destination adapter, right?
Correct.
If you need to do something crazy, once the data's finally, you know, formatted, you always have an out with this OLEDB command thing.
Yeah, just be conscious of the amount of data you expect to pass through
right.
it.
Maybe 100 rows, but not 10 million, right?
Indeed. Yeah. So something to note about these row transformations is that one operation per row. So the fact is, these can be parallelized internally. So we get great deals of efficiency with them, excepting the OLEDB command because we're dependent on an external resource
right.
doing something. But beyond that, we should expect to get great performance from the data flow for these. Now, the row set transformations are somewhat different because to perform their output, they need to, in a sense, dam the flow of data coming down. So when we look at the common ones of aggregation and sort, while they are very, very efficient, and in fact may well be more efficient than the source provider performing aggregation and sorting itself, it does require that you have adequate resources, i.e. memory, that all of the data can be contained before it performs its operation. So it could well be that you have 50 million rows coming into the aggregate, and the output could be 5 or 6 rows representing the aggregation of this. So some other row set transformations include the ability to pivot and unpivot, so transforming the nature of your data, and sampling, that we're only interested, for example, in 50% of the data, and it could randomly produce, you know, a 50% sample of the data and split that, and then you could take that in different paths. A great use of this is actually data mining, preparing data for training versus testing of your mining models. Split and join is where it gets interesting, where we can produce this routing of the data. So conditional split, for you developers, it's you'll be familiar with the case statement. It's pretty much the case statement that
for
you
data.
Can implement a series of conditions and the first match wins, and that will then push the data to that output. It's a way of either filtering data or dealing with data differently according to a certain condition.
And it's important to note that you're parceling out your data when you go through that. You've actually created multiple data flows on the other end of that, right?
Well, it's still one data flow, but you've just got multiple paths that indeed could just mean different operations will take place, and we might, using a union all, for example,
bring them back into
one stream. So where you have this requirement to treat data differently or discard certain data.
That's a better word, stream.
Right. So what else do we have in here? Multicast says that we have one input and we can multicast out. For example, I want that data to go to two destinations, SQL Server and Oracle at the same time. We can multicast to two destinations very, very easily. The lookup transformation is very, very common in our FACT package designs because it'll be used efficiently to look up the surrogate keys of our dimension tables. We have merge and merge join as well, so the merge there is the ability to do what union all does, but it expects its inputs to be sorted, and it will then interleave the results and ensure that the output is sorted as well. The merge join is like the join clause you have in a select clause, right? So like a from. We have inner, we have left outer, and we have full outer. And this is the way we start to integrate multiple sources into one stream that can be effectively processed and loaded into a single destination. Now, for business intelligence, there are a whole series of specialized transformations that ship with the Enterprise Edition only. Data mining query, row by row, it will execute a query against a data mining model and introduce data mining query results. So great for cleansing of data. Fuzzy grouping and fuzzy lookup for working with dirty data that we might have duplicates that we want to eliminate, or we might be looking for approximate matches in a lookup, whereas a lookup is an exact match process. A fuzzy lookup is going to look up based on statistics about how close the match would happen. So when used in conjunction with a conditional split, we can test the statistics that it delivers and then make a decision within the data flow itself whether or not that match is sufficient. Term extraction and term lookup are typically used to prepare data for text mining. And then we come to the script transformation. So if the logic you're looking for isn't in the toolbox, like with the control flow, we have the ability to use VB.NET and C# to customize the behavior of the data flow. And the really cool thing about the script transformation is that you can adapt it to become either a source, a destination, or a transformation. And this could just be that you've got custom logic or that you want a more efficient design, that you could just use your coding skills to decide what happens row by row when the data flows through. To finish off, because I think there's some 27 transformations in the toolbox,
quite a few.
The audit just adds supplementary information typically used to audit how a record arrived in a fact table. Cache transform allows us to prepare the caches used by the lookup transformation. So the default behavior is the lookup transformation does this when the data flow starts. That could be very slow for large lookup sets. We could prepare this in advance. We could store it to disk. We could reuse it across multiple packages using this transform.
One of the number one feature requests for SQL Server 2008 was that cache object. You know, before we had to, if we had to look up the same data 10 times in the same package, you just have to take the hit. Now you can cache it, reuse it.
Yeah. So it was understood that that was often a bottleneck within the data flow, was actually caching that data set to begin with.
Yeah.
Export and import column allows you to work with the file system. So row by row, you can import or export values. So I know this is something I've always had a pain with, getting blobs into a table of SQL Server. It's really easy if they're already on the file system, and you can extract them through your data into the data flow. And then once it's in the data flow, you can then send that to any destination. Row count would be the simplest transformation. Configure it, just use a single variable of type integer, and it will simply meter the number of rows that are passed through it. So it's very effective for logging in ETL, or to, in the control flow, say, well, we're only going to proceed with the next task if the row count's greater than zero. If there are no errors logged in the data flow, we don't need to continue moving. And then we come to the slowly changing dimension transformation that's there to assist with the configuration of a common requirement with dimensions, and that is to manage the versioning, or rather the historical accuracy of how we describe our business entities. That as products or characteristics of products or people change over time, it might be important to persist the historical representation. This is definitely important in business intelligence. So we have this transformation that fast tracks the development of this. We're going to explore that in the next presentation. So I'm going to leave you with some resources if you need to read more about these transformations. Otherwise, back to you, Roger.
Thanks a lot, and we'll see you in the next presentation.